my reason for not being here. I got a call about 10:30 this morning that one of our folks on the ridge was being taken to the hospital with an apparent heart attack. So I have had the great joy of sitting in the emergency room at St. Mary's about all day. So thankfully, it turned out not to be a heart attack. We're not sure what the reason was. Part of it is emotional. She's coming up on the first anniversary of her husband's death. They were married for 87 years. And a part of it is just the emotion of dealing with that. And she got to thinking about that this morning and got herself worked into quite a state and thought maybe she was having a heart attack, but she was not. So I have decided that the emergency room is the last place in the world to go if something's wrong with you, because you're going to be there a while. They don't get in a hurry. I'm glad I could make it. Sorry to disturb your class by coming in late. I intended to be here. And in keeping with that, let me give you a couple of commercials. I think most of you know that Saturday is our area-wide teachers' workshop at South Point. And hope that you are planning to be there, and some from your congregation. I think at my last report, only three area congregations had reported anybody was coming, although we know others are. So you might tell Mark 8 if you are planning to come, or if some folks are coming from your congregation, so that way you can get your name in the pot, so to speak, for the luncheon that they're going to provide. They want to...
Oh, I thought you were having a raffle.
Is that what it is?
That'll bring him in.
That'll bring him in.
Mark wants to get in. He wants you to wrap it.
And also in regard to, I just mentioned that Maxine was wrestling with her husband's death. The anniversary of it is November the 2nd. We are having a roundtable grief group meet on Saturday, December the something another. Is it the 11th? Somebody have a calendar? Does that sound like a Saturday? Somebody tell me what the one that's close to that is, if it's not the 11th.
The 11th?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry, the 10th.
Okay. Saturday. Okay. And we're calling it Making It Through the Holidays. If you are grieving or know someone who is, you know that the holidays are absolutely awful because they're so associated with family. So we're going to meet in our multipurpose room building for 2 hours on that Saturday, 6 to 8. We're going to serve finger foods. And we're just going to sit around and talk about what works, what's helped, what hasn't helped, what we wish people would do, what we wish people would not do. And there'll be some handouts. So you might want to tell your folks about that. You'll be getting a flyer on it. But that's Making It Through the Holidays. Okay. Communicating the sermon. Why do you suppose preachers prepare and deliver sermons? What two things are they wanting people to do with them?
Hopefully be uplifted with it.
Okay, uplifted.
That means some action to be taken.
Yeah, okay. I think the first one is to be understood, and the second one is to be acted upon. Would you agree? We want people, when we preach, to understand what we're saying. We don't want them to go away and say, I didn't get it. I don't know what he was talking about. We want them to get it. But secondarily, we want them to act upon it, do something. You know, we pray sometimes in prayers, help us take the sermon home and put it into use in our lives. Have you ever listened to one you didn't have a clue what to do with? You didn't know how to take it home and put it into use in your life or anybody else's life, you just didn't get it? Well, to get those two things accomplished, to get people to understand it and get people to act upon it, is a matter of communication. Is communication tough?
Yes, it can be.
husbands and wives, is communication tough?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How many times does your mate say to you, well, that's not what I meant? Or I told you to, well, that's not what I heard. I think communication is just a very difficult thing. And preaching is an act of communication. We're trying to communicate a message in such a way that people will understand it and will act upon it. So with that in mind, these are the notes over chapter 8 of the book, if you've read it. And we'll talk about definitions. How would you define communication? Now, you can pick one of the definitions out of the book, or you can just tell us what you think good communication is. What would you say? Good communication. What is communication?
Mutual meeting of meanings.
A mutual meeting of meanings. I like that because it has that M thing going on in it. A mutual meeting of meanings. Which means what?
Each person understands what the other person is playing and telling.
Okay. That means that you understand what I intend for you to understand. That my meaning as I speak is the same one you receive as you listen. I had a case in point of that tonight. Last Sunday, we had one of our members come forward and ask for prayers. He's a man who is in his mid-40s, has a fine family, and has had a terrible year. His mother died. And he was very close to his mother, and it just impacted his life immensely. And he said, pray for me. So I had one of the ladies ask me today, now when he came forward, what was he saying? Well, I said, he was saying exactly what I explained to the congregation. She said, yeah, but what was that? And I said, well, he said he'd had a really bad year. It had just really worn him down, and he needed the prayers of the church. Well, what did he mean by that? He meant he had had a very bad year. He was terribly worn down physically and emotionally and spiritually, and he needed the prayers of the church. I don't know if she ever got it. I don't know that we had a mutual meeting of the means at all. But that's what we're striving for. When I speak, I have a meaning in mind. What you hear and understand is what I want you to hear and understand is what I meant. I want you to understand it as I meant it to be understood. So I think that's a good definition. It's very simple, a mutual meeting of the meanings. How else would you define communication? Do you have a different definition? I think I gave you one that I like, which is very similar to that, is that good communication is when you see in your mind the picture that I see in my mind. I think communication is the transmission of pictures. I want you to see something, not just hear the words, but I want you to see whatever the picture is I'm painting. I want it to be transferred to your mind that you see exactly the same thing that I'm seeing. Now, if you read the definitions in the book, and there were several of them, did you notice a word that seemed to be present in nearly all of the definitions? Now, it was not in the definitions that we gave, either the one that Chuck gave or the one that I gave, but it was in all of the definitions, I think, in the book.
Process.
That's a new way of looking at communication. Often, communication in the past has been defined more as a specific action that takes place and not a continuing process. Meaning that if I say something one time and you may or may not get it just exactly as I want it to be said then, communication takes some work. It is a continuing process of my trying to explain and you're trying to understand. So I think it's helpful for us to look at communication as an ongoing process that is not just a fell swoop, that is just not a one-time thing that happens and it's over, but it is a process.
You mean that? I was thinking of it, I read this, that I used to be next door to this older gentleman, and I'd hear him talk to people working in field operations. He'd tell them what they wanted to do, and he'd make them repeat it back to
them. Yes.
And I don't think he needed that bump. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Going back and forth, he finally arrived.
It may be, or telling it more than once, or telling it in different ways, so that the communication is received. You know, I've made the point that Jesus was just wonderful in saying a thing two or three different ways so that ultimately you would get it. And he might give a teaching, then he might give a parable that would explain the teaching, and then he might make a specific application to you, to the disciples. He wanted that process of communication to be ongoing. Plus, and you brought up something we're going to talk about a little later in the lesson, is feedback. The authors call it feedback. We don't get, when we preach, much talk back. Although I've had some people mumble under their breath as I tried to preach. But the best we can get is some feedback, some sense of here's how it's going. They're getting it, they're not getting it. I have frankly explained something and I would say, now did you get that? And I've seen people go, well, what if I just stop right there? The process of communication was not completed. I had not gotten them to understand. So I needed to retool and say it a different way or say it again, or I needed to do something, because the end result is the mutual meeting of the meanings. And I think we just need to look at communication as a process that is never complete until you see in your mind the same picture that I see in my mind.
What do you do when you get somebody that just never does get it?
Yeah, and I've had students like that in class, and it was just like they don't get it. And then at some point, it's kind of like the light goes on, and they go, I got it. And everybody else in the class has already gotten it. You know, and everybody else is kind of, come on, get it. And they don't. And a lot of that goes back to, you remember when we did the educational work of the church and we talked about learning styles? You remember that lesson? That not everybody learns the same way. And some people don't get it the way you present it. And so you have to try to tap their learning style so they'll pick up on it. But you're going to run the risk always in communication, since you are doing mass communication, that not everybody's going to get it, ever.
There's one woman in particular I had in mind that, you know, we were in a Bible class situation, and Mark explained it. She didn't get it. So I tried to explain, and she still didn't get it. And I mean, it went around the room. Almost every single person tried wording it a different way for her, and she still never got it.
And that could be for a lot of reasons. That can be sometimes we go into situations with a preconceived idea, and we can't get past that. You know, sometimes we just, you know, it's like, I know what the truth is, don't confuse me with facts. And I think sometimes that happens, and people have preconceived ideas and they just never get over that. But it may be we're not doing a very good job communicating it, explaining it. And it may be that we're using language they don't understand and can't identify with, can't get a hook on.
You know, according to what you say here about your congregation, do you have to form your lessons according to their age group?
I have to do my lessons in a way that I think will reach the majority of the congregation. Now let me give you a for instance. In Knoxville, at the Carnes Church, that congregation is made up largely of young marriage to middle age, highly educated people. The church at Greasy Ridge is not made up of young to middle age married couples who are highly educated. It's not. That's no reflection on me. That's just the facts. I could say things in one place that I could not say in another and be understood. So I think you have to make sure that you are communicating in a way that most people will be able to get. And that doesn't mean you dumb down anything, or it doesn't mean you try to be more intelligent than you are. But I think you say things in a way that people can get that and understand that. I think you always, part of communication is keeping your audience in mind. Absolutely.
Tom, what do you think, have you developed formally and informally people within the congregation that you use, like, say, five people that you say, you kind of use them as a gauge?
Oh, yeah. I have people I look at periodically, see how I'm doing.
But I mean, even afterwards, do you have people that you kind of think, well, I know they'll be honest with me?
Yes. There are people, if I would go to sleep up there and sleep for 25 of the 30 minutes and give an invitation, they'd go, I'd say, great job, brother. It wouldn't matter what I did. It wouldn't matter what I did. That's just something they say as they go out, right?
So those are people you select?
No. And then there are others that I know they will be very honest with me. They don't have a blanket good job. They will say things like, get a good job never really impresses me. I'm impressed by the, you helped me understand that verse. I never did quite understand that verse. Or what you said really helped me as I struggle with this. I know then that that comes from the heart and they're getting it. And so yes, I do have a handful of people. My wife being top on the list. If she doesn't get it, she tells me. I don't know what you were talking about this morning. And, you know, in my self-righteousness, I could say, well, you know, are you stupid or something? But she's not. She's not. And she's going to be just bluntly playing with me in a loving way, in the most Christian way possible. And I appreciate what she says because she keeps me thinking. And there are others that I want to know. And sometimes if I preach a particularly delicate sermon, I will ask, how do you think it went? Was I over the top on that? Because I want to know that. I think there are some preachers who are so insecure that they don't want to know that. That just would break their spirit. But I've not been one of those. I want to know. Because I want to be better. And so yes, I do have people that I watch and people that I listen to and people that I talk to about my sermons. How do the authors of our book say that the definition of communication has changed over the years?
Went from a static to a fixed model to one of interaction.
Yes, okay. Yes, it's not a static or fixed model, but one of interaction, which means I communicate by saying what I have to say in a way that people can understand and hopefully will act upon it. And then I seek feedback on that to see how I'm doing. Now let me ask you this, since that's the next question. What is feedback?
The art of understanding the needs of the people, what they think, and what they are feeling at the time of the sermon.
But how do you do that? That's right. That's what it is. But how do you do that? You don't get talk back. See, if we're having a communication, right, like we are now, and you don't understand what I said, what do?
You ask.
You raise your hand and say, I didn't get that.
Can't do that in a sermon.
But it's hard to do that in a sermon, isn't it?
Yes.
It really is hard to do that in a sermon. So
body language would be one.
Yeah, body language. Okay, give me some specifics. That's a general, but what are you talking about?
Well, if somebody is, you know, obviously looking you in the eye or paying attention or nodding their head or turning in their Bible or...
Yes.
You know, those are some things that... Somebody's nodding off,
yeah.
That's probably the opposite.
Yeah.
Or
absolutely. If somebody is looking at me, and if I say something that demands a positive response, and they go like this, okay, they're with me. Or I say, you wouldn't want to do that, would you? No. They're with me. I mean, I've got them. I'm getting a feel back from them. Or if I call out a verse and they turn to it, and find it, and they're reading along with me, I think, okay, I'm communicating. We're doing okay. But if those people that I watch, and I do have people in the congregation that I don't mean I watch steadfastly, but I look at them from time to time, if I see them kind of like, you know, there's some people who are going to go to sleep no matter what. But if they've nodded off, I'm thinking, okay, I'm losing them. Why is that? Is it their fault because they just didn't get any sleep last night, or am I that boring, or am I that confusing to them? So I think you have to develop a sense of feel back, and much of it is body language. As you preach, you get used to knowing how people react to your preaching. And anything that is out of the ordinary, that is not how they usually respond to your preaching, is a cause for some kind of concern, if it's a negative thing. Okay, anything about definition? Do we have a pretty good idea in our mind of what communication is? It's arriving at some degree of common understanding. It is a process. Okay, what are the four factors in communication?
First one's preacher.
The preacher.
Second one's the message.
The message.
Third one's the channel.
The channel.
And the fourth one's
is the audience.
The audience.
Okay, so let's talk about each one of those. How does a preacher play a part in this communication process?
He's got to give the message.
Okay, he has to give the message. What determines how effective he is in communication?
Preparation is the primary one.
Okay, preparation. You think that's primary?
Well, you just can't get up there and wing
no,
it.
No, no, I agree with that. My question is, do you think that's the primary one?
I think a good part of that would be the understanding of what you're going to be talking about.
Okay.
If you don't have a good grasp of what you're going to convey, you're not going to be able to convey it.
Sometimes there's more emphasis given on the actual presentation of something rather than the preparation.
Okay.
The sense that, you know, somebody gets up there and they're very charismatic,
mm-hmm.
but what did they actually say?
Mm-hmm.
But you could actually over-prepare in some ways or kind of have a not a very focused intent for the thing. So
okay.
I don't know if it's primary, but I think sometimes we downplay preparation.
Yes.
Proper preparation.
You want to feel like you've got a rapport with them.
Okay.
That you, personal preparation.
Okay.
That you can, you feel, you know, they feel what you feel and want to talk it out or talk back and forth.
All right. Book stress is attitude.
Yes, attitude. Mm-hmm. Character. I think that one of the most primary things in communication is character. Don't you feel that some people are just fakey? and that this is not genuine? And don't you really appreciate a speaker that you feel like he's being very transparent, he's being very open, he's real, he's a person of character. There's no pretense there. He's not wearing a mask. He's not trying to be somebody he's not. I mentioned in a Bible class the other day Jimmy Swaggart by way of illustration. And one fellow spoke up and said, I always thought he was a fake. And, you know, how would you feel about somebody like that, especially now that you know his track record for liking to go cruise the streets in Baton Rouge and pick up prostitutes? How do you feel? Would that color anything he said?
Yeah.
And how you listen to him?
Yeah.
Because he's not a person of character.
No.
And so I think character is a primary thing. I think ability probably plays in there. Aren't speakers of varying ability? I mean, there are some people, I wouldn't care how much they prepared, they would not be as good a communicator as other people are. Does that make sense to you? Because if you don't have it, you don't have it. I think you can prepare, but some people just have a natural ability to communicate. So I think that plays a part. Training plays a part.
Would you be safe to say that, I mean, this is my own feelings now, I feel God's given all of us differing degrees
mm-hmm.
of talent.
Yeah.
And we're not all going to measure up to each other.
That's exactly right. And we shouldn't try.
But you have those out there that will go out of their way to be like somebody they think is greater than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
And they fall flat.
Yeah, the parable of talents says that not everybody has the same ability, same talent.
I feel like character, though, that's something that I've heard people say, and to a certain extent, I just think, just in the world and so forth, is people could have these faults over here, and they may be a drinker or something, but they do these other things good, so you still hold them in regard for these good things. But I've come clean over the years, if you don't respect somebody in any area of their life, you have to be careful about respecting them or following them. And I know some ministers that, you know, it's hard for me to listen to them, and I know, you know, sometimes when they're preaching the things they say, they're not following themselves, and very seriously not following them. And it's to sit there and listen to anything, even if it's not on that topic, that, you know, to actually take them with any seriousness.
I agree. That's why I said I think character is a primary point. I think that is probably the primary thing. And I think other things like preparation, I think like ability, like training. I think some people are better speakers, better communicators because they've been trained to. I think it's something you learn. I don't think you just intuitively know all of the fine art of communication. That's why in college you have umpteen speech classes, and you learn how to communicate with people, and attitude, all of those things enter in to the preacher being a part of this communication process. Then there's the message. What is the message? What passes between you? What passes between you? Now, what's the problem with that? It may not be what you aim to pass between you. I have a friend who preached for years in the Church of God of the Union Assembly, which was a Pentecostal group. And I mean, he was a aisle runner, seat jumper, I mean, all of the classic stuff. And he was converted and was both a preacher and an elder later in the church, was an elder when I went to, in the church when I went to Knoxville. His wife, of all people, said to him, "Johnny," said, "when you preach, you always look like you're mad." And truth be known, he did. It was his demeanor. I mean, it looked like he was ready for a fight, and that he was mad. There was no smiling. It was attack. Now, do you suppose the message that he transmitted was always the one that he wanted to transmit? Because in his mind, he may have been preaching about the love of God. But what were people receiving?
The wrath of God.
Yeah, this guy's hacked off about something. He's giving us down the road today. So the message is what actually passes between the speaker and the audience. It may or may not be what you intend to pass between you and the audience. Your verbal and nonverbal communication can all enter into that. I had students at the School of Preaching when I taught this class there for so many years who would slouch all over the pulpit. I mean, they would just... and I would say, "Stand up!"
That's what I was thinking about when you were talking about falling asleep.
Yeah.
Just up there on the stage. You don't mind if I'll just lay down? Yeah. And, talk to you guys.
And I know we are in a casual age. But I mean, they would put on their Sunday best, which would be a pair of cargo pants that had never been pressed for the last 6 years. And had all the pockets sticking out every place. Shoes that had never been polished in their life. A jacket that did not match. A tie that was not tied very well and was off the color scheme of anything they had on. And they'd slouch around and wonder why. "Well, we preached the truth, but you know, we went there and they didn't ask us to come back." And I think, well, good. You don't deserve to go back. Because what was the message that was actually passing? I don't care. This is a casual thing. I'm not serious about this. And I would say, you've got to make sure the right message passes. Now, I know we can go the other way. I don't expect everybody to wear you know, a $500 suit and all of this kind of stuff. But I expect when we stand up that we look the part of what we're trying to be. And that people respect us and have a right to respect us. I don't think that we demand it, but we command the respect. And that the message that we're intending is the one that actually passes. It's not some other message that we don't even mean to be sending. You with me? Questions, comments?
Agree.
Okay. The channel. This is the conduit along which the message flows. It involves words. It involves actions. It involves facial expressions. It involves the setting in which we find ourselves. And that's the channel, the conduit through which the message flows. We want that conduit to be open. We want the message to flow. We don't want anything that's going to stop or interfere with the message. I had a fellow that I taught at Ohio Valley College. And I went to hear him preach one time. And I felt like I was attending a tennis match. Because he was there, and he was there. And then he was there, and then he was there. And then he came down off the pulpit and circled and was back out. And then he was there, and then he was here. And of course, as a former student, he came to me afterward wondering how he did. I said, "Teddy, would you stand still? I could not possibly keep up with you. Most of what you said was absolutely right on target. But you were a moving target. I could not keep up with you. How you were doing was distracting because it was not a casual movement. It was just a very quick movement." Well, would you say his channel was open that morning? Not for me. Not for me. And words. I think here we have to... my line has always been, if you speak poorly, there are some people who will never know it. Right? But there are people who will know it and will hold it against you. If you speak well, nobody will hold that against you. And everybody will understand you and appreciate you. And I had a student from West Virginia who told me he didn't come to school to learn to preach, to learn to speak. He came to learn to preach. And I just wanted to pass him because I thought, if you're that stupid, I mean, there's nothing I can do to help you. Because how do you preach?
Speaking.
By speaking. Give me a break. But he was a country boy, and he ain't at everything. This ain't true, that ain't true. And he didn't know subject and verb agreement from anything in the world. And I mean, it was just atrocious. Now, the best of speakers will make a mistake in his grammar sometime. I mean, everybody will. But when you're proud of it, I mean, that's another matter. So I think such things as the words you choose, your facial expressions, don't act like you're mad at the people.
Took some learning for me to not have to, or I'm from Eastern Kentucky. I didn't want to tell people they need to be baptized further remission of sins.
Further remission of sins. Is that F-E-R or F-U-R? Fur.
Either way is acceptable. In Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, in Eastern Kentucky. And there's the audience who hears an encoded message via channels. Why is the message encoded?
Mark, you're awful quiet.
He doesn't encode his messages. What's the encoding of a message?
It arrives with a meaning that you placed on it, and they got to try to figure that out.
That's exactly right. They've got to decode what you've said. And I say we have our preacherese stuff. That we know what it means, I suppose. But I don't know that the audience does. I mean, he's the propitiation for our sins, and not for our sins only, but also for the sins of the whole world. Praise the Lord. And people are sitting there saying, he's what? Pro what? What's that word? What's that mean? But we've impressed them because we know. But if they're not able to decode that and understand that term, what's the benefit of it?
We had to decode homiletics for several when we were
sermon preparation and delivery. Yes, that's what I told somebody. I said I couldn't spell homiletics, so I just taught sermon preparation and delivery.
You know you're a bad speller when you get about halfway through. Let's do some other word.
Yeah, let's think of something else. But I think this decoding is serious business. And it can depend on things that we don't mean to be misunderstood. It's just a part of us. Now, for me, for instance, in my studies, genre is a word that I use and understand. But do you suppose that the average member of a congregation, when you say, this is a particular genre of literature, and in the book of Revelation, it is apocalyptic. I mean, I lost them, didn't I? As genre, they don't know what that means. And furthermore, they don't know what apocalyptic means.
Creeping
Ridge.
Huh?
Not a creeping ridge. No. They're learning. Because I think a part of what preaching is that although your people initially may not understand, your job is to bring them to a point where they understand. And not that you don't dumb down the message, but you make it simple enough for people to understand. You explain your words. If you're using a word, they don't understand. You say, now here's what that word means. And I think that's crucial. I think that's important to bringing people along to where they need to be. But I think there are words that are just really familiar to us, and it doesn't mean everybody understands them. So we have to help them decode. We have to give them the secret ring and explain the scheme to them.
When I was in Knoxville, they used to say, put it down where the cows can graze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right.
I've remembered that. That struck with me.
Well, that's good. Okay. What personal matters regarding the preacher influence his communication?
Receiver's level of skill, attitude, needs, religious background, and social cultural system.
Whew.
I get it out yet.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I think that there are several things that the preacher has to do to make sure that his communication is influenced in the right way. It's influenced by his personality. It's influenced by his spiritual life. It's influenced by his academic preparation. It's influenced by his research. And so we need to make sure that he is able to communicate effectively. Why should we seek harmony between the message and the channel?
Flows better.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly right. Otherwise, we got to get to plunger and unhook it, unplug that thing. That's exactly right.
We can use on that live focus. Yeah, Mark was talking about.
Why is it important to know the people in our audience if we are to be effective communicators?
I mean, they're watching what. Well, when I came here, I was watching what Mark done.
Okay. I've been watching too.
I mean, I just got saved last night and baptized last night.
Okay,
I kept
terrific.
On watching Mark.
Wonderful.
Did he do anything wrong?
Okay, that's
and
good.
I kept on asking, I want the peace you got. You'll get it. Hang in there.
Very good. Yeah. Well, we cannot meet their needs if we don't know them, can we? I think we have to be familiar with them. In what ways does the preacher prepare himself? We talked about that a little bit, personally, spiritually, academically, through research. What does it mean to write or speak for the ear?
For the understanding.
Okay.
Clarity.
In the way that you would expect people to understand it. Now, that's the way I write. And Gary Hampton and I have this ongoing fuss over this. And this is one thing he's absolutely wrong about. I told him that in an email this past week. Gary is a very clean, crisp writer. He can put a ton of stuff in a sentence. Now, the problem I see with that for me is I've got to stop and try to analyze that sentence. I've got to try to get all out of that sentence that's in that sentence. I write exactly like I talk. I don't put the uhs and the uhs and that in there, but I write just exactly as if I were giving an oral presentation of anything. And one of the best compliments I ever got, I had a professor of English correct a manuscript that I sent in for a lecture book one time in Florida. And he said, I got so wrapped up in the message I forgot to correct it. He said, I had to go back and read it the second time to correct it. And I took that as a compliment. Because what I was wanting him to do is get caught up in the flow of the message. And I don't want anybody to have to stop and think about what I meant by a particular sentence. But that's a different. That's just a stylistic difference. Gary's the one that's written all the books and made all the money, you know. I've read a couple and colored in two or three more others. But, you know, my experience is not nearly as great as his is. But I think especially when it comes to preaching, we preach for the ear, for it to be heard. I don't want people, if they have to sit and analyze what I've said, what's the problem? By the time they get sentence number one analyzed, where am I going to be?
Long gone.
Long gone, right?
Sometimes you get these long sentences.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm wordy. I really am. I'm wordy when I write. I have sentences that go on for 7 pages. You know, I just put commas in and go on. Why do the authors of our book suggest an oral manuscript?
Very reason we've been discussing, but it kind of caught me by surprise. I don't that you verbally preach through the sermon before in your mind before you actually start building the sermon. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and that's a new concept, and I think it's a difficult thing to do. But I go through the sermon in my mind before I ever put a word on paper. I have an oral manuscript in my mind. When I get up, I always know the first 4 or 5 sentences I'm going to say. Because I think that's the hardest thing in the world, get started. You know, so I know, here's what I'm going to say first, here's what I'm going to say second, here's how I'm going to lead into the sermon. But I the problem with that is I pick the awfulest times to do my oral manuscript. About 11 o'clock at night when I'm crawling in bed. And I'm lying there going, yeah. I don't get sleep very early. But I really think there's some value to the oral manuscript because it gets it down in a deliverable way. Then you put that to whatever you use to paper, whether it's a notes, outline, you know, whatever you use.
He talked about taking notes as you're going through that. I mean, he said sometimes you'll just have one sheet, sometimes several sheets. You go the other direction, but he's talking about you're thinking through and you just put it right down.
Yeah, instead of going from the small end up, he's saying start up here with this oral manuscript. You've got it laid out in your mind. You know what you want to do, where you want to go. Now, the outline is the map of how to get there. But if you start with the map first, you may not know where you want to go. And you may just end up wherever you end up. And if you don't care where you are, you're never lost. Those are words to live by. If you don't care where you are, you're never lost. Do you know that? Okay, that was deep. What are the 3 areas of communication listed by the authors?
Respiration, pulmonation, and resonation.
Okay, what's all that mean?
Respiration has to do with your breathing. phonation is the production of sound, and resonation is the amplification and reinforcement of the sound in the cavities.
Okay.
Of your throat, nose, head, whatever.
Okay, what I wanted in that one. was self-communication, verbal communication, visual communication. What are the three areas of communication? First of all, self-communication, which means a disclosure of yourself. Now, I think that can be carried to an extreme. I've got to tell you this one. One of the classes when I taught this at school that we had was a class on illustrations. So I asked them to give a personal illustration. They had to give an illustration from history. They had to give one from current events, and they had to give a personal illustration. They had to tell what they would illustrate with that illustration and what verse they would use. So this fella got up, and he said, one of the most awful days of my life was when my girlfriend called to tell me that she was pregnant. I thought, this is going to be good. He said, but we were married, and that pregnancy resulted in this little girl, and he named his little girl, and he said, when she was born was one of the greatest days of my life. And that illustrates that God can take bad situations and make good out of them. And I'm thinking, maybe so, but I really think that's too much information to lay on your congregation, don't you?
Yeah.
I think that's just telling more than you need to tell. I'm not about to get up and tell all of the mistakes I've made in my life. First of all, it'd take far too long. And secondly, I'd be out of a job. But I think by the same token, there's something about letting people know who we are. I think that people who listen to us want to know that we're not fakey, that we're not wearing a mask, that we're real, that we're genuine, that we care about them. I think we're communicating ourselves to the audience. Don't you think so? And aren't there people that you've listened to that after they've communicated themselves a little bit, you either felt like, ooh, he's really stuck on himself, or he's not worth listening to? And then there are others after they've revealed a little bit of themselves, you say, I think I want to listen to this guy. I believe he has something to say. And then verbal communications, that's saying the right words in a pleasing or effective way. And here's where you get into your respiration and your resonation and your articulation and all of those kinds of things. I think we use words to communicate, but we ought to use words in a way that they're understood, they're pronounced as correctly as we can pronounce them, that we slow down or we don't slur our words. And then visual communication is how do you carry yourself? What kind of feeling do people have by just seeing you standing in the pulpit? What are your expressions as you speak? Are you like my friend who looks mad every time he preaches? What does it mean when the authors of our text say, communicating a sermon begins with a speaker's being and not his saying or doing? And I think they're right on target with that one. Does it go back to that question I asked, what is his primary point? It is who he is.
I mean, you could have everything memorized, you know, but it's not some sort of formula that unlocks people's hearts. It's the fact that you're genuine and that you are in the right state of mind when you are communicating to them.
When you listen to a preacher, What are the things that you want to feel about him as you listen to him?
I think I want to know that he's genuine. I want to know that he's genuine.
He's genuine, okay. Okay. What else?
That he cares for you.
He cares about me. I want to feel that this guy genuinely cares about me. What else?
That he's a trustworthy person to listen to, okay. As far as he'll guide you the right way.
That he knows what he's talking about. As far as I'm concerned, those are the two things that I want to feel. That he knows what he's talking about and he cares about me. If I get that feeling, then I'm ready to listen to this guy. If I don't feel like he knows what he's talking about, it's like, why do I need to listen to him? And if I don't feel like he cares about me, I'm not interested in listening to him either. I want to feel like he knows what he's talking about and he genuinely cares about me, which goes to integrity. Okay? Now, who knows what we're going to do next week? We're going to have topical sermons. I'm going to talk about what's a topical sermon, what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages. I'm going to bring you what I think are examples. Now you may say, if that wasn't a very good example, okay, we're going to see. But I'm going to tell you what I think is an example, and then the fellows who are taking the class for credit will bring with them to the next session a topical sermon. The next class after we have the
2 weeks
from tonight. Yeah, 2 weeks. And it will be consistent with everything we've learned, meaning I want to know your text and what the essence of the text of a sentence is. I want to know what your proposition is. I want to know what your connecting word is. I want to know all the stuff we've learned in those nuts and bolts classes. Okay? And you want to put that at the top of your page before you start your sermon. And then give me the sermon. Okay? What you may want to do is take an old one you have and rework it to save yourself some work. That'll be fine. Alrighty? Thank you.